Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is the iPhone Ellie Podcast, episode 47 for July 6th, 2009. That's not a rubber ducky, it's an iPhone. All right, well, it's time for the iPhone Ellie Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and we are here to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, iTunes, the App Store, all that fun stuff. Tonight with me, as always, is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, and as always, it is a pleasure and a roller coaster ride of excitement to be with you.
Yes, I like the way you say that. I like what you said. I'm not talking about the intonation of that. I'm just that it's a roller coaster because we don't want to get into anything, any potty humor, because we would never do that on the iPhone Ellie Podcast, especially not with Jeff Gamet.
I get embarrassed.
Yeah. And also here from the Mac cast is Mr. Adam Christensen. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
It's good to have you back.
A little warm, but okay.
Yeah, you weren't on the last episode. You were driving in your car, and I should mention because I listened back to last week's episode, and I neglected to mention one very important detail of why I was at someone else's place using someone else's equipment. I was actually in Florida on road trip. I randomly decided to go. I'm up near Chicago, and I decided to drive down to Florida. And like I said before, George Drage was kind enough to let me podcast from his house. So that was awesome. And so thanks, George. And also here is Ken Ray from the macOS Ken podcast. Hey, Ken.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
Good. And I was actually on the day six, the macOS Ken day six.
You actually
show.
Were. That's true.
It finally happened, and you'll never have me back.
No, you were on once before.
Was I?
Because I remember you. Well, yeah, because you had pretty much that same reaction.
Oh.
Oh, boy, I'm finally here. So then when I had you on this time, I thought, yeah, novelty will wear off. No, not so much.
No,
turns out.
Never with Ken Ray.
Yeah, right. Except, yeah, right. Yeah. No doubt. Anyway, yeah, thanks for doing that. It was fun and pleasure to be here, you know, as occasionally.
Yes. And we have a new. This is going to be a good show. I can already tell. Mr. Corey Bowen is here. He's a new member of the iPhone Ellie crew, and I believe he used to work at a little place called TUAW, and now he's joined up. Thanks for being here, Corey.
No problem. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good.
So am I allowed to say that you used to work at TUAW?
Oh, who told you that information? I don't know. No, I'm just kidding.
Someone named Truck Spank told me.
Oh, okay.
Whoever that is. So yeah, thanks for being here, and hopefully we can get you on more often to talk about iPhone stuff. And so let's dive into it. No pun intended for this first story. iPhone 3GS.
You lie.
There was a total.
I didn't mean to.
All right.
I said it and I looked down and there it was. So it was perfect. So I'll edit all this out and pretend like I meant to do it. The iPhone 3G.
No, you won't.
No, I won't. I don't edit anything. The iPhone 3GS survives a dip in the pool. I'm sure most of us who follow the iPhone stuff have seen this video already. But essentially, someone was holding their iPhone and saying, "Oh, this is the iPhone," and I'm recording people in the pool. And whoops, it's in the pool, and it survived. After when I first saw it, I thought, "Well, you know, that's kind of cool." And then I kind of started thinking about it, and I think we all are kind of suspicious of whether or not this is an iPhone. So who wants to go first? Corey, I think we were talking about it earlier. You think fake?
Yeah, I'm calling it a fake. If you watch it right about 30 seconds, when he actually goes and drops it in the water, you can see like a strap hanging off the device. And I mean, unless it's like a case or something, I'm calling it a fake, but
okay. You mean when he drops it, you see the strap?
Yeah. As soon as it like hits the water, you can see like a strap floating.
Oh, interesting. I'm looking at it and I don't know. It's interesting. And I think the resolution of it is a little like not what a 3GS does. I have a feeling it's a little more wide, but I may be mistaken. But otherwise, Corey pointed out a really interesting fact that anything you upload to YouTube from your iPhone, it gets a little in the more info on the side. It says uploaded with an iPhone. And that video does not have that. So don't try.
See, I think it's obvious that it's not a real video because the Jesus phone really shouldn't fall in, should it?
That's true.
That's an excellent point.
Get her across the top.
We need to have you on more often, Ken. You
and
point out these obvious facts.
That.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't think it's an iPhone. But don't put your iPhone in the water. And I don't think that, you know, even OtterBox has come out with a, I think it's the Defender. I don't know, Jeff. Do you remember what the waterproof one is?
I can't remember what it's called, but even with their waterproof case, they say, you know, don't hold this underwater.
Yeah, I think it's like for splashes. Like if you splash in the tub with your iPhone, Jeff.
Right, because I always Twitter from the bathtub.
Yeah, well, and that and, Run DMC also, but he uses a BlackBerry. But now I think with this video, he might switch. Because he can blog from his tub with the iPhone.
Michael, I think iPhone Alley is the definitive, you know, publication that should probably figure out if this is real or not.
We have just figured
it
out.
You should do the scientific testing and sacrifice your iPhone to figure it out.
Corey,
not sacrifice your iPhone.
Corey, I think because I think you're the most intelligent person at iPhone Alley. I think you should put your iPhone in a pool. see how I did that? I complimented you and then told you to do something stupid. But he did.
You are just such a user. You know that?
He sent me a screenshot of the strap while the iPhone is in the water. So I'm pretty sure it is not an iPhone.
You know, the thing about that video is that I kept forgetting to watch for the iPhone because I panned across the girls in their swimsuits.
Yeah. I think that's what the video was about. So there's that. I'm guessing if anybody thinks it's actually an iPhone, you can speak up, but you probably don't want to now with the peer pressure happening here. So Apple has seeded a new version of iPhone 3.0. It's 3.1 beta and, of course, an SDK for that. And it comes with a bunch of new features as well as some weird bugs. So I'm just kind of pretending to say something as I try to load up this page here. It does come with, we should mention a feature that we talked about last week where you can't copy any information from a contact. You know, you can't just hold down and have it copy that. You actually have to go into the edit mode and copy it out. It's really inconvenient. That's been fixed.
Well, of course, on the other hand, who would ever want to copy a single piece of information out of a contact to give to someone else? That's just crazy talk.
Right. No one would ever want to give someone an address or a phone number or anything like that. But it is cool. You can not only can you grab from those little fields, you can even grab from the name. I believe you can. I mean, it lets you copy from the photo as well. So that's pretty awesome. They added that. I think we all decided that it was that they would quickly add that. It also turns on the MMS option in messages, although for AT&T people, anybody else probably already has it, but it doesn't work yet. So that's an AT&T thing. Yeah, it also adds non-destructive video editing, which I think makes sense. You can save as after you do an edit.
I'm curious. There was one thing in the stuff that I was reading about it. I'm curious about there's, and this was from, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Macworld UK or World of Apple. I know it was one of the two. There's a video editor controller API that'll let third-party apps call up the video editing interface. I'm a little confused about that. Does that mean that other companies are going to be able to write video editing software for it? Or does that mean like if I'm for some reason in Facebook and I shoot a video there, I can call up the video but stay in the Facebook app? I'm confused as to why you would want to call up the video editing interface.
Okay, yeah.
If you're not going to be able to write something special for it.
So we're talking about, like we were talking about before the show, Beehive having video support now, and it that would allow you to not only just, you know, hit, you know, record and then send the video, you can actually trim it down before you send it out while still being in Beehive.
But is it going to give me as a developer like different things that I can do to the video?
I think it's just going to give you...
In other words, let's say I want to do like night vision or something like that. Can I throw a filter over, you know, the existing video? Or any sort of like rudimentary, like one step above what you can normally do on a phone, but not, I mean, obviously not Final Cut Pro or anything like that. But I mean, can I do any kind of weird effects or something? As a developer, can I write and add those? Or is it just going to be, you can open up Apple standard video editing in some other application?
I think it would be awesome if you could do that, but I'm guessing because it's Apple we're talking about, it's just going to be the sheet where you can trim the video down.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, that's still cool, but I'd like it if they did something more too.
Yeah. I'm just happy it's not non-destructive finally. I don't know why it wasn't non-destructive from the beginning.
Yeah.
That is
one of the first things I tested.
Hey, look, baby's first steps. Now, if I just take off the first step, can I get it back? Oh, no.
No.
Shake to undo does not undo that.
I tried that, too. The whole shake to undo thing, no, doesn't work.
Shake to undo doesn't work in all the places it really should, to be honest.
Well, and, you know, jumping back to the contacts thing, you know, why is it that, you know, it's great that we can now copy the contact again. Why that wasn't there from the beginning, I think we can all agree on. But another thing that I'm just wondering is, so I can, like, head-to-head, you know, peer-to-peer play a game. Why can't I peer-to-peer share a contact? Still?
Can I just throw that out? You know, funny you should bring that up, because I was lamenting that very thing last night.
And then you called up Steve Jobs.
I could beam from my Newton could beam a contact from one Newton to another. I mean, yeah. This is not foreign technology to Apple.
There's some application out there that can do it. I can't remember the name of the application off the top of my head.
There are millions of applications that do that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. But the problem is the other person has to have the exact same application.
Yep.
Right.
And I had, I think, five of them loaded on my iPhone at one point. And still, every time I'd need to exchange information with someone, either they didn't have one of those five, or each one had its own steps that you had to follow, and someone in the process couldn't figure it out. So finally, I just deleted them all off, and so now it's just easier for me to say, no, I'll have to email you something.
Right. Which you can also do from your iPhone, though. I mean, yeah, it was neat that you could stand across from somebody. You're talking about, like, I didn't have a Newton, but I had a Handspring visor.
Right.
It had the infrared thing where you, like, stand line of sight, and you can do that, right?
Yeah, I loved that.
It was kind of cool, but is there not a risk? I mean, is there not a little bit of a security risk with that? I mean, because obviously they're not going to put in the infrared thing on the iPhone, so it's going to use something else that's not going to be line of sight necessarily.
It would use Bluetooth. I mean, it's the same thing you're using for the video games. You can Bluetooth or Wi-Fi it, you know, if you're on the same Wi-Fi. No.
Yeah, do the peer-to-peer thing. And it has the, you know, type 4 digits, you know, authenticate code thingy that you have, like, with your iTunes.
Do we just want it because it's a neat whistle? I mean,
I want it because I don't want to have to carry punch a ton of business cards in my stupid bag when I'm standing at a conference and, you know, everybody I'm in contact with has an iPhone, and you're standing there with your iPhone because they're Twittering something, and it's like, oh, here's your business card, and I've got to go now scan that in or somehow get it. It's like, if they could just hit a button and shoot it over, you'd be done. That's transaction's done. You're in my thing. I don't have to worry about it. It syncs to the cloud. It's back on my computer at home. Done. Done and done.
You know, I was doing that exact same thing with my Palm Pilot with presentations. Geez, what was this? Like 1998, 99, something like that.
Right.
And I'd finish a presentation and people would want my contact info. So I'd hold up my palm and I'd hit whatever the button was that you hit so that it would broadcast out your contact info. And there would be all these other people in the audience, and they'd just be holding up their palms too, and they'd all get the card because it'd go out IR to all of them at once. It was great. the good old days, you know, when we had technology that worked the way we wanted. And sorry about that. I almost dropped my drink.
Okay, good. So, I was worried.
You're right. I mean, so the backup to that is you email the V card and they get it instantly on their iPhone. So it has to bounce up to the cloud and bounce back down. It's not that inconvenient, or you have one of these third apps. But it just seems funny to me that, you know, they made such a big deal about the new software has peer-to-peer, but it's not in the – I fully expected it to be in the contacts section.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, that would make too much sense. So – see, the oleophobic screen supposedly is getting scratches on it. Have you guys, well, who, first of all, by show of hands, who has an iPhone? I think it's like Adam, right?
What do you mean?
An iPhone 3GS, sorry.
Yes, I have. Am I the only one?
And me,
I have
too.
One.
Oh, okay. And Corey does. All right.
I haven't upgraded yet.
So have we seen any scratches on the screen?
No, but I have to say, I really am not a fan of the oleophobic screen per se.
Really? Why?
I don't, you know, and this maybe isn't fair because my original iPhone, I had an invisible shield on, and maybe this is why, but it still gets greasy like with the slightest touch. So mine's always dirty. So yeah, great. It's easy to wipe off. And maybe the 3G, I didn't have a 3G. So I don't know if there was a difference in the screen from the first gen to the third. I don't think there was, but I'm almost ready to go back to having a screen protector. I haven't been using anything on it. So the question on, does it scratch? I've had mine for, you know, since it came out with no skin, nothing on it, no case, and I have no scratches. So I haven't seen that. But it does get smudgier than heck. And yeah, it wipes off a lot easier. So maybe that's the oleophobic, but it was almost better with my invisible shield on it because I never got anything on it. I mean, it just didn't pick up grease. So I expected more out of it, I guess, because they were making such a big deal about it. But
I think
wipes off easier.
Well, from, you know, I never had a screen protector on my iPhone. So I think it does repel oil a lot better than the other one. I mean, it still gets smudges and all that. But like you said, it's easy to wipe off. But I definitely think even without, you know, having to worry about wiping it off, I think it's pretty good at repelling the oil as well. But you mentioned screen protectors. I wonder if you'll be able to put a screen protector on here. And, you know, what happens when you peel it off? If you're going to, you know, ruin the oleophobic coating on there.
Well, this is the problem with coatings, too, because I have, you know, I have glasses and they always try and sell you those coatings and they all eventually kind of flake off or, you know, so I'm wondering if in some cases it's just a quality thing where some people had the coating was applied not well or didn't bond properly because it was a bad batch or whatever. And that's scratching or flaking off. And maybe it's just an isolated thing because I've seen the reports, you know, online as well, but I haven't personally noticed it online.
You know, all of the 3GS models I've played with so far are not showing scratches on their screens. And a couple of them have, well, let's say they've gone through extensive field abuse already, and their screens look okay. And one of them has a screen protector on it, and it's working just fine. But I'd like to see what happens when they go to pull that screen protector off. I'm wondering if it'll trash out that oleophobic coating.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. How many of you actually use, I mean, Adam, you use a screen protector, or you did. Does anybody else use a screen protector?
You know, I used to use screen protectors all the time. And that was simply because they came with the different products that I was trying out.
Right.
And finally, I just got tired of having them on because I'd have a little bubble under there or one of Nightshade's hairs would get stuck underneath. And so I just quit using screen protectors.
You should just not have Nightshade put the screen protector on your phone.
Look, I'm paying her. She has to do something around here.
It's true. She is your office manager.
She is.
Yeah, I don't use the screen protector just simply because I've always thought, all right, it's made out of glass and I've seen, you know, the PC world guys take a key to the screen and it doesn't scratch. So no big deal. And then I've seen, I actually at some point saw someone with a bunch of scratches on their screen. So I'm kind of curious about putting a screen protector on my phone. You know, I've got tons of them, just like you said, from all the products that I get in. So who knows? I just don't want to ruin my oleophobic screen. And if that's, you know, if I peel that off, will I be able to get a replacement? Well, probably not.
Yeah. I don't know about with the iPhone 3GS, but, I had invisible shields on all of mine. I love that product. The key to it was applying it properly. Like Jeff was saying, if you didn't get it on just right, you got a bubble under there, it could be very, very annoying. And so by the fourth time, I've had them on my iPods and stuff like that. So I've got the process down. So the one that was on my last iPhone I could never even tell that it was really on there. And most people who picked it up couldn't tell. Other than it does change the surface a little bit. It's more of a matte finish. And that's what I think I kind of liked, because it wasn't getting the smudges, because it had a little bit of a matte, more of a matte style finish to it. And yeah. So with this new one, it's very slick. It's very... slippery. I worry about dropping it sometimes, but I just noticed the smudges now, and that's been a little bit frustrating. But really, as you're using it, it's not a problem. It's when you turn it off and you're like, ugh, what do I do to this thing? But yeah,
I'll actually send an email to iSkin and see what they or not iSkin. What's the
Zag
is
the company? And they're guaranteed the for life. Shield. So, I had one that was messed up, and, literally I just paid the $3 or whatever to have it replaced. So, was able to just reapply it.
Cool. All right. So, the iPhone 3GS, the white versions, have been getting discolored. We've seen a lot of reports of overheating and discoloration. People thought there was a correlation between that, and I guess... maybe Corey, you want to take this one because you just wrote up another piece on that. Essentially, Apple is saying that one, the phones are just kind of being left in cars, I guess. they're saying, you idiots, you're leaving your phone in the car, and that's why it's getting hot. And two, you have crappy cases on them, and that's why they're getting discolored.
Yeah, so like French iPhone today, reported that. They had talked with an Apple level 3 tech support who's basically like an engineer, and they basically told them that because of like the heat issues with the 3GS and the 3G, that some of the cases that they may be using might actually have like residue on the back or possibly like pigments in the color that are actually sticking to the back of the white iPhones, which is kind of interesting. Never would have thought that.
And I think
wait a minute. They're saying that the cases that individuals are putting on them have...
Yeah, it's third-party cases, like you would go out and buy.
Wait, hold on. So, but only the people who are buying the white iPhones.
Right.
I mean, the issue is that it really shouldn't heat up enough. And what are you going to put on the back that's going to make it discolor when it gets up to a normal operating temperature?
Well, I think that I've seen that kind of thing happen with white MacBooks in backpacks that have a black maybe coating or something like that on the inside and on the material. You get some discoloration from that over time.
You get discoloration on you get discoloration on the whole machine, or you get discoloration around the battery
on the whole machine.
I've had that happen to me as well with my iBook. I had a black sleeve, and there was an opening at the top where the Apple logo was, and around that was still white, but the rest of the MacBook was still discolored.
So it was absorbing dye from the sleeve or something.
Right, yeah.
Right.
And I've definitely seen cases that could certainly have, some kind of dye in them that would transfer with, a little bit of heat. Mm-hmm.
All right, the people who have an iPhone 3GS sitting here on this panel, though, have you noticed your machines running any hotter? Have you noticed them running significantly hotter than the iPhone 3G, or probably not the iPhone, but than the iPhone 3G did?
Not at all.
Okay.
It definitely runs hotter. I can vouch that it runs hotter than the original iPhone.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. you know, probably you would think, just accounting for the little bit faster processor and the graphics and stuff like that, it's gonna heat up. And I think it depends on what you're doing, though, too. I mean, I'm not really heavily using mine for games, but I could imagine someone, you know, with a case, especially like something that would keep heat in, some sort of neoprene or, you know, one of the rubberized cases or something like that, and you're playing 2-3 hours some intensive game, it's going to heat up pretty good. And yeah. I'm, you know, I don't up to date on my chemistry or anything like that, but you have something in there that might leach into the white, and obviously you're not going to notice it on the black, because, you know, you're not going to see the color shift.
Right.
But, I mean, certainly the white is having some issues, but I mean, didn't Apple have the same problem? It sounds like there's some issues with their white plastics in general. I mean, we had the same problem with the MacBooks, and they actually admitted to it with that, and were actually swapping out, you know, top cases, you know, where the handrests were and stuff like that. They were saying like sweat and oils would get on there and then would heat up and then cause discoloration. Could it be the same kind of thing where, you know, oils from people's hands are building up on the back of the thing, and then it gets hot and it just basically kind of cooks the plastic? They're saying that's not the case.
I think it's more likely that, you know, it's from cases. That makes more sense, especially just with the amount of time that's passed since the iPhone 3GS has come out. I don't know if it's more from like baking grease and stuff like that on there. But I mean, it does get hot. I don't think it gets any hotter than the 3G. I mean, it really hasn't been something that I've noticed ever, unless I leave it, like I said, out in the car.
So. But aren't there reports out there, though, that some of the iPhones are getting too hot to put to people's faces? I mean, are we assuming that it is because of the case, and that the case is capturing the heat and then it gets too hot to put to somebody's face? Or is it possible, and I'm not saying that this is what's happening, but is it possible that there's a bad batch of batteries out there?
That's very possible. I mean, it does get, you know, a little hot, but, you know, I'm sure, you know, that's very possible. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure not everybody who's, you know, complaining of this is, you know, completely stupid about, you know, leaving their phones in the car.
Now, I'm wondering if there might be a software-related issue as well, at least in certain situations. And I'm saying that because I'm still using an iPhone 3G, and for the past couple of weeks, I've been trying to figure out why it's getting hot.
Oh.
And I went so far as to take pretty much every application off my iPhone, thinking, okay, maybe there's a possibility that there's an app that's not 3G or 3.0 ready that's causing some type of rogue process or something that's making the processor just run way too hard.
Right.
And I've been going without a case, and I'm still having problems where my iPhone's getting really hot. And today it got hot enough that 3G shut off and switched me back to Edge. And
did it tell you that it was doing that, or it just kind of happened and you assumed that's why?
It just happened. I was stationary, and I was in a place that I've had a strong 3G signal for the past year.
Okay.
And I'm watching, and all of a sudden I switch from 3G to Edge.
Huh.
And I had my full signal on 3G when it switched, and my iPhone was still getting hotter. And of course, I don't have the little numbers to see percentage. I probably would have been freaking out as the numbers spun down. But I was watching my little battery indicator. It was actually shrinking down over a 10-minute period where I lost over half my battery.
I want to mention that too, because, you know, you guys mentioned this overheating battery. I've just in general been a little bit disappointed with my 3GS and the battery, and I have to wonder if I don't have something faulty, because I've witnessed the same thing where I will be. It's almost like I can watch the battery, and I have the percentage indicator up there, and I'm watching it drop, you know, 10% in 10 minutes, going, what the heck is going on? And I'm just, you know, surfing online, so I'm on Wi-Fi. I have everything on now, I have to admit, Wi-Fi and 3G and Bluetooth, but I never saw any of that. I used all those things on my original iPhone, and I never saw that kind of battery drain go out of that thing. And I can barely make it a day when I'm just doing what I would consider light to medium usage. I can only imagine if I was a heavy user, that I'd be very disappointed with the battery. I've actually been considering, you know, taking it back into the Apple Store and having them check it.
I think you should. Ken, were we were talking about this on your show last night, right?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, maybe I was. I'm trying to,
because I don't have a 3GS, so I'm trying to not. I would like for somebody to say something definitive. Preferably, I'd like for Apple to say something definitive, and I know they're not going to anytime soon. Until, if they decide there actually is a problem, I can't imagine they're going to say anything until they actually have a fix. But I mean, that notice that was saying, you know, don't leave your iPhone in the car, run it between this temperature and this temperature. I mean, that's just sort of a standard boiler. Pardon that. I'm sorry. That wasn't intentional. That's a standard boilerplate thing. I mean, where they just put that out and say, you know, don't do that. And yeah, it happened to come out right now. But I mean, it was obviously, it did not seem to me reading it, it didn't seem to me to be a response to people saying, hey, this is cooking the back of my hand or cooking the back of my phone. Mm-hmm. And what's really weird, part of me has wondered, and again, since I don't have one, I can't say, but part of me has wondered if it's a little bit of hypochondria, because there are things where people will say, oh, well, it is running really hot. Well, define really hot. I mean, you know, nobody is saying, and also nobody is saying, like any of the things that you see in the tech press or online, they're not setting out and answering all the questions that we're asking. And, you know, like, okay, are you using a case? Fine. What kind of case are you using? You know, I mean, there's just like people are just popping up and saying, my phone's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all, I mean, like,
so
forum stuff.
It would
stuff.
Be neat if, like, somebody would, I mean, like, the guy who writes for Wired, Charlie Sorrell, said that he noticed his second generation iPod Touch was getting hot after the 3.0. And he was writing about iPhones overheating, but he was wondering if maybe there wasn't a power management problem with the software, just like you said, Jeff, about, yeah. You know, that was making everything run hotter.
That
but
sounds
I can
really
tell
likely.
You that I'm on my iPhone all the time, and it's not getting any hotter now than it was when I was running 2.whatever.
Yeah.
For so me, I'd like to see more on it, more concrete data.
Well, for me, anecdotally, you know, I'm running the 3GS. I had the 3G before. It's not really getting, you know, uncomfortably hot. It might get a little warm every now and then, you know, maybe after a charge or, I don't know, maybe not even after a charge, but like playing some games, sure. I'm using an in-case slider, and I don't really notice any, you know, heat issues at all. I'm also not noticing any sort of, you know, crazy battery drain either. I have 95% of my battery right now, and it hasn't really, you know, gone down much. And I don't usually charge it at night. I just kind of, whenever I get in my car and plug it in, that's whatever it gets.
Okay, now that's another interesting thing. I hadn't even thought about that, the battery life. It seems like my 3G has a shorter battery life now. However, that might be the hypochondria thing kicking in because it's been getting hot. So I really don't know for sure, but it sure feels like my battery life is shorter. However, on my second gen iPod Touch, after installing the 3.0 update, I can let my iPod sit here, turned on but not used, and like not touch it on my desk for 3 days. And my battery will have gone from a full charge to almost depleted.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Is that with Wi-Fi on or Wi-Fi off?
Wi-Fi is on.
Now, for me, I have a 3G that just kind of hangs out because I, you know, that's what I used to use, and I don't have a SIM card in there. And I've left it on overnight, just on, you know, with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and, you know, location services and all that stuff on, and it hardly goes down at all. And same thing with my 3GS. I have the Bluetooth, Wi-Fi checking on, and location services, and of course 3G. So it may be a power management thing that's being affected by like a setting, which would be weird. Who knows? There are a lot of different variables. I'm not experiencing it.
All right. So maybe if there's someone out there that had some temperature sensor gear that they would let me get my hands on, I would be able to do some tests on the different iPhones and iPod Touches I have and see if I can get some patterns on how hot these things are really running. So if someone has the gear out there and wants to let me use it, hunt me down.
Someone send Jeff a thermal camera.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do have to say fine in terms of the battery going down. It does seem to be okay as long as I'm not using it. I've only noticed this weird thing, like Jeff was describing, when I'm actually doing something with it. So playing a game, running an app, browsing the web. But it just seems like it's going down faster. And again, it could be, going back to the hypochondriac thing, now that I have the little percentage indicator, I'm just more aware of it because I'm seeing that the numbers tick down.
That's what I was thinking too, because I don't have, I mean, now I have it on and I'm going to be crazy about it. But I was wondering if, you know, now that you have that little indicator on the percentage thing, if maybe you're just noticing it more, do you notice, I mean, you probably don't even look at the little battery icon anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That. So maybe I just need to turn that off and just forget about it. But I just notice I'm getting to the end of the day and I'm really low on my battery life, where with my first gen, again, it's probably though just me, my learning curve and going from a first gen iPhone to a 3G as well is probably a big part of the problem, because that, you know, the first gen only had Edge. It probably wasn't, you know, using as much battery. So I could get to the end of the day and have like, you know, still at 50% on the battery meter, and now I'm down, you know, 20% getting toward the red near the end of the day, and I'm going like, I haven't even used this. I've surfed the web a couple times and answered some emails, done a few tweets, and you know, why is this so low?
I was gonna ask you about that. Are you finding that your usage is the same now that you've got the faster one, or have you started using it more? I mean, I'm not saying that as part of the whole battery life thing. I'm just wondering, like, are you finding now that you just can't take your eyes off the iPhone now that you've got the super fast one?
No, not at all. But it is much more enjoyable to use, I'll tell you.
It really is.
Right.
And I think I was talking with somebody about this, but another thing we can talk about is that, you know, there are a lot of new iPhone owners out there, and we all remember what it was like when we first got our iPhone. We were just, you know, playing with it constantly. And I think that could contribute to a lot of those anecdotal reports of, you know, bad battery life and, you know, hot phones. So.
That's interesting. Still shouldn't be enough to discolor the back, though.
I don't think that, my personal opinion is that the discoloration isn't really due so much from, you know, the heat itself making the plastic turn a weird color.
Yeah. You know, personal experience on the case thing. I had a friend who got the original iPhone 3G, and right when he bought one of the little in-case cases, and it had, you know, sort of a tire tread kind of pattern on the back of it, you know, a texture to it.
Sure.
Had had it in that for a couple weeks. He was a pretty heavy user, a heavier user than I was, and he had the black one, and literally he got Apple to swap his iPhone out because it had left a pattern. I mean, that pattern kind of imprinted itself on the back plastic of his black iPhone where he couldn't rub it off.
Interesting.
So I have a feeling same kind of thing was going on where it, you know, leached some of the color. So it was, you know, he sort of have a dark black versus light black stripy pattern on the back of the phone. So he doesn't use a case now, consequently, because of that. So he would be one person who would agree with the reports that it's the cases that are somehow leaching or damaging the back plastic on the phone.
Yeah, I can definitely see that as being the cause. So who here, does anybody jailbreak and or unlock their phone here?
I did it once and didn't enjoy it.
Like in like 2.0 days?
Yeah, I mean, it was really easy to do, and it was really cool. I jailbroke my phone before Macworld just so that I could run quick. I mean, that was the number one reason why I wanted to do it. So I did it before I went up to Macworld, and it was cool and everything, but it just ended up being more hassle for me than it was worth. For one app, for the one thing that I wanted to do on it, it was like, you know, I can't upgrade when I want to upgrade. There's new features. I got to wait. You know, I got to worry about all this stuff. And it just, you know, hacking my iPhone has never been good for me, as you can attest to, Michael, because you helped me out recently.
You mean with the tethering thing?
Yeah.
Well, that's not a hack. That's something else, and you can uninstall it. But
the way I did it, though, the first time.
With the iTunes thing? You did the plist thing, and then you went.
Then I did the nasty baseband thing, and you helped me reverse out of it. But
oh yeah, see, I don't think that was like a something that changes at a level that Jailbreak would.
No. But I just going back, like,
yeah,
that all the reasons to jailbreak or hack the phone or whatever have always, in the end, once I've done it, it's sort of like, why did I do this? It's not even really worth it because it's more hassle to deal with afterwards.
Well, it's been so long since I've done it, and a lot of people still, you know, they'll ask me about jailbreaking and they'll be confused that I don't know because I'm the iPhone Alley guy. But, you know, we've decided to kind of tone down our coverage of hacking on the site just because it's not the popular thing to do. And that's, I guess it's the follow-up question. Do we want, I mean, there's an iPhone 3GS unlock on the horizon. I think there's an iPhone 3G and iPhone unlock available right now.
Wait a minute, an unlock or a jailbreak?
Unlock.
But you can't unlock an iPod Touch.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's already unlocked to nothing.
Right.
But, I mean, there's the jailbreak. I can understand a lot of people. Okay, here's, and I'm going to get emails about this, but I think here's the number one reason people jailbreak: hacked, pirated apps.
I think that's a fair statement. I mean, Apple, yeah, especially in this round, has taken away most of the reasons why anybody would want to jailbreak. Again, the only other reason I could think of is there are some really out there apps like Quick, which still isn't authorized for the iPhone. Mm-hmm. You know, they would love to have it on the iPhone. It, for whatever reason, Apple, AT&T, whatever you want to believe, isn't going to let it, hasn't let it on there, or might never let it on there. So there are those few apps, but the vast, you know, 99.5% of people, I think you're probably right in that 0.5%, most of them are doing it for that reason.
And yeah, and the, you know, I used to pirate, you know, a lot of stuff on the computer, but you know, now after, you know, I've gotten a lot of personal relationships with the developers and talked to them, and so I know what they're going through to make these applications, and it just it's tough to see, you know, a post. You know, it's really interesting because I've got a Google alert thing that tells me when someone mentions iPhone Alley, and every once in a while I'll see someone posting a hacked app with, you know, along with the review from iPhone Alley, you know, that says, you know, get this application. And it's, you know, it kind of sucks to see that. But do you think people are jailbreaking, or not jailbreaking, but unlocking? You think that's still a popular thing?
I think unlocking is popular, especially with like the first gen iPhones. And I know a couple people that after getting new iPhones, did the unlock on their first gen, and then put them up on eBay and made as much money, if not more, as it costs to buy their 3GS.
Okay, so you think it's just kind of a throw it on eBay thing, but I don't know if it's like a practical, like, oh, I need an unlock so I can use my T-Mobile SIM.
No, I think it's primarily people that are thinking, hey, this is an easy way for me to recoup the cost of my 3GS, and they would be right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's all I have. If anybody has anything else to say,
well,
we can.
The other thing on the unlock thing, there are, you know, a lot of people who don't want to leave their carrier, and we're talking globally here. We're not talking just,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Apple has exclusivity deals in other countries as well. So there's a lot of people that just don't want to leave their carrier for whatever reason. Either they can't, or they just hate the other carrier. I mean, there's so many people here in the States that hate AT&T, will never buy an iPhone as long as it's on AT&T, no matter what. So, you know, it's attractive to them to think, I can get the phone, I can unlock it, and I can bring it over to, in the States, T-Mobile, which isn't that much better. I think a lot of people would really like to see it on Verizon, but, you know, other countries. So I think, you know, the unlock is popular for that. There's also countries Apple's just not in yet. So the unlock's popular for that reason too. So there's almost more reasons to do the unlock that I can think of than really to do the jailbreak these days.
Huh. So I'm thinking it's, you know, the big reason aside from the pirating was to get notifications of, you know, maybe Twitter updates or anything like that, because it's still, you know, I'm a little envious of the Android people who have, you know, they have a little notification as soon as a new Twitter comes in, or, you know, whatever else kind of push application they have, you know, for information like that, stuff that makes sense to run in the background.
ask those guys and the Palm Pre guys how that works out with battery life,
though. I should. I actually met someone who has a Palm Pre, and I said, have you tried cutting cheese with it? I'm guessing by the silence, nobody's seen this video.
You know, I haven't seen the video, but I have heard several people complain about cutting their fingers.
Oh. You know, see, I mean, Gizmodo posted a video of cutting cheese with a Palm Pre.
Did they really?
Yeah, it's fantastic. If you,
that's cool.
Yeah, Fake Steve Jobs posted that, and I should mention because I love Fake Steve, he's back. So Fake Steve.
Does it do the really thin slices like deli style?
I think you have to go to school for that. You have to go to Palm Pre, you know,
cheese slicing school.
Yes, cheese slicing school, and they do that in L.A. I think.
And then you can make a great hoagie.
Yeah.
Can I tell a goofy story? I've only held the Palm Pre one time, and it was when I went to New York for Clayton Morris's Gadgets and Games show on Fox. So the day the iPhone came out, or the iPhone 3GS came out, and it was Peter Rojas and Paul Miller, I think, from Engadget or Gadget now with Peter, Ross Rubin from NPD, and via Skype we had Walt Mossberg. And everybody on the panel was really mostly complimentary of the Pre and its styling. Although I had only played with one that day. It was the first time I'd seen one. And it feels like a Tonka toy to me. No, I'm sorry. I take that back. Because Tonka toys are tough. It really did not feel like a good phone to me. I don't like the design of it at all. I would like to see what happens with WebOS. But I just hated the design. At that point, Clayton actually said that he was jokingly saying he cut his finger on it. At least I think he was jokingly saying he cut his finger on it. Although if you've heard, Jeff, the people have cut their fingers on it, then maybe he did. Boy, did Mossberg get angry. He was like, well, I disagree with that because the reviews have been very good.
Mossberg said that?
Yeah. Okay, I'm well, first of all, you wrote one of the reviews. And secondly, I still don't like the design and I still won't like the design. I don't like the buttons on it. The one thing I didn't notice, and I wish I would love to go back now to one of the stores. I didn't notice any sharp edge that I could cut myself on. I just didn't like the phone, like just the shape of it. Now, again, it was a beautiful screen and WebOS seemed great. But I mean, it's kind of hard with everything else that they took from Apple. Cues on industrial design really do not seem to have been one of the things they took, except for the stone, the touchstone. I believe it's called.
Yeah.
The not charger that they've got where you just sort of balance it with the magnet.
Yeah. The interesting thing about the touchstone is you actually have to, I was looking at this, ironically, I was looking at the Palm Pre site today and I was like, oh, let's check out the touchstone. And you actually have to put a different back on your Pre for it to work
which may be why I didn't notice any sort of horrible rough edge. I don't know how the back fits on there and what that does to the edge that everybody's talking about.
The edge is actually when you flip up the screen to see the keyboard.
Yeah.
At the very bottom, at the bottom of the keyboard.
Okay. So it would have had the case on it. Because the demo model that I was looking at had the touchstone, and so it had the case on it as well. So maybe that takes care of that.
No, it's just a different backing. So you take off the one backing, and then you put on a different one. So like a think of your whatever Razer or whatever phone. So it's going to be sharp either way. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah. Otherwise, I've played with the Palm Pre for about 5 minutes, and it was cool. I'll say that, grudgingly.
All right. I disliked it, and I wanted to like it.
I like the Android a little more. The software is killer. I think the software on the Pre is awesome. What they have,
yes.
As far as the interface, it's just very slick. But I don't know.
Oh. It's just, I mean, for me, and Peter Rojas actually talked me into it a little bit. What I didn't like about it was mostly the keyboard. I type with two thumbs, not one. So I'm a big fan of Landscape in 3.0 coming to more of the applications, more of the core applications. Trying to type with two thumbs on the Pre was actually what I said then was it reminded me of playing like one of those Mattel football games that, some of us had when we were like 8.
Oh, the good old days.
It was just really
I have that for the iPhone, by the way. It's great on the iPhone.
Mattel Electronic Football 2?
Yes.
Do you really? I didn't know it was out there. That's my pick.
That's your pick.
Yeah. I think it was Peter said, you know, it's great for people who do one-handed texting, which I've never done that.
I didn't know people do that.
I didn't realize people did it either, but I mean, I've always...
Well, yeah, it's because they have one hand on their phone and the other hand on the steering wheel.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
There you go. That's excellent.
I think I want to change my pick, but go ahead. Oh, I think Corey was going to say something.
Oh, yeah. I had, like, played around with the pre for, like, all of 20 seconds. Like, clicked on the calendar app, and it restarted on me.
Hey, wow.
Oh, that's another that reminds me. The guy who has the pre, he's like, yeah, it's got these, you know, it's kind of slow and, like, these things, and it's kind of weird with this. But, I mean, it's beta software, so it's cool. And I was, like, they released the phone with beta software on it. He's like, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Of course, I still want to play with one. I haven't had a chance to play with one.
You should. They're really neat. They're really neat. And I'm not, I don't dislike the industrial design of it as much as Ken does, I don't think. I think it looks all right. It's kind of sleek. I don't know.
All right, really? So just for comparison, did you like the G1, Michael?
Hardware-wise?
Hardware-wise, yeah.
No. Yucky. Okay. Yucky.
Yeah, I didn't like the G1 hardware. And actually, I'm not a big fan of Android. I know for a lot of people it's going to be great, and I like the idea of having all this smartphone OS competition. But the operating system itself, I was not impressed with.
On the Android?
So, on the Android, yeah.
Huh.
So I'm looking forward to giving a chance, you know, just so I can play with it and see what it does.
It's more polished. I can say that than the Android, but I think the Android has more capabilities and it's a little more utilitarian, but it, you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I think the difference between Android and iPhone OS, and I can't say for sure with the Palm Pre because I haven't played with Web OS yet, but it feels more like instead of writing an operating system for a platform, it was designed as a web interface. More like a web platform that just happens to be running on this phone.
Hmm. Okay.
And I'm sure that there's a bunch of Android people out there that are going to start flaming me, and that's okay.
Yeah. You can flame them on Twitter at twitter.com/jgamut.
There you go.
Okay. And if we don't have anything else to talk about as far as, you know,
That app for Ken is called LED Football 2.
LED Football 2?
Yep.
Wow, so they just stole the Mattel Electronic Football 2 thing, didn't they?
Yeah. The UI is exactly the same. It's great.
That's awesome.
I'm gonna change my pick and then insert my old pick into the we're talking about news stuff. Apple's remote app was recently updated, and I think we missed it. It was out last week, but I hadn't actually had a chance to play with it because I was away from home. One of the fantastic things about that application is that it lets you control your Apple TV. So, like with annoying stuff like typing on the Apple TV, which is a pain normally, you can just type right on the phone because the keyboard slides right up, and you can type there and, you know, do the search through YouTube or whatever. The one weird irritating thing is you always had to have your Apple remote right beside you so you could menu through the different items on your Apple TV. So now Apple, you know, did an update to the Apple TV and they did an update to the remote application. And you can now, with this newfangled gesture thing, you can control everything on your Apple TV. You don't have to have your white Apple remote at all. And Adam, I'm guessing that you've played with that.
It's funny you bring that up because I literally just tried it yesterday. I had not popped open the Apple TV since I had updated the remote app, and yeah, it's like 1,000 times better now. It's a bit bizarre because there's a disconnect of swiping your finger on your iPhone and then watching, you know, the menus and things scroll up and down on the screen across the room.
Right.
But yeah, it's very cool.
At first, it was a little weird to use. And not just because of that, it was weird to get the feel of how it, you know, certain things are accelerated and all that and how you do it. But I mean, for the most part, it rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff,
I installed it on my iPhone and iPod Touch specifically to use with Apple TV. And it completely changed how I deal with Apple TV. Because, yeah, before I had to either have my iPhone and the remote with me so that I could do half of it on my iPhone and half of it with the remote, which typically meant I just set my iPhone down and use the Apple remote. But now I can do all of it from the one device. And it will even wake up your Apple TV if it's in the sleep mode.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and that was something I tried a couple days ago because I was actually picking up the white remote and hitting the menu button to wake up my Apple TV, setting it down, and then starting in with the remote app. So I thought, well, let's just see if it wakes up, and sure enough, it did.
Now, they changed it at some point. How do you sleep your Apple TV? Because I haven't, it used to be like hold, play, pause, right?
Yeah, hold, play, pause for 6 seconds, but you have to be on a menu screen for that to work. And actually, that's the one thing that I still need the white remote for, so that I can put my iPod or Apple TV back to sleep.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right. Well, with that, let's move on to our iPhone picks of the week. Jeff, would you like to go first?
Sure. I'm actually going to go with an app that I think has been around for a while, but it's still kind of cool. And it's called Earth 3D. And it's just this cool little app that lets you look at animated view of Earth and the Moon. And you know, it's not like I guess earth shattering is not the right term to use, but it's just this free little app, and it gives you these nice like photorealistic views of the Earth. And that's all it does. I don't think it has very good ratings on the App Store.
2.5 stars.
Yeah, but you know what? It's a fun little app.
And it's free.
And I guess I'm looking it up now. Okay, so they have a new version. Well, new as of February. That's 99 cents, and it adds a lot more features in. But that didn't get very good reviews either. But you know what? For free, it's a fun little app, and it's kind of cool, and you can spin the Earth around. And I thought it was cool because it helps give people a nice visual perspective of how the Earth and the Moon relate.
Can I take us on a little aside about ratings? Just something I want to point out that
Absolutely.
I've noticed, and I'm wondering if any of you have noticed as well. But have you noticed inherently a free app will always be about one star lower in ratings than a paid app, even the ones you like? Like, I have tons of free apps that I love, and they all tend to be on average about one star rating lower than my favorite paid apps. And I don't know if it's because people feel bad about giving a bad rating to something they paid for, or it's just the fact that when something's free, anybody can rate it, and so they'll just say whatever they want.
I think it has a lot to do with all the 14-year-olds with iPhones.
That's my impression as well. So I don't necessarily throw out a 2-star rating on a free app as much as I would on a
It doesn't cook my fries 1 star.
Yeah. The other thing that's weird is sometimes I'll see a 1-star rating, but then somebody says something like, "I love this app, it couldn't be better."
Yeah.
And I can't tell if they're trying to be ironic or if they're just idiots who don't understand the difference between a 1-star rating and a 5-star rating.
I've seen that too.
I shouldn't say idiots, because maybe it's a cultural difference. Maybe someplace else in the world it goes in a different way. Like 5 stars would be, well, 5 stars isn't bad, but really you need to get down to 1.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but the app ratings are...
They're broken.
They're weird.
Yeah, they're broken.
I've seen the reverse of that, where someone gives it 5 stars and says, "This sucks. I shouldn't have bought this. Don't buy it."
Maybe they're from the same country where 1 star means excellent.
That's possible.
Well, you know, there are certain cultures where when you go into a building, the first floor is the very top floor, as opposed to the bottom floor. So
we may have cracked it.
There you go. See, this is investigative journalism in action.
Well, none of us are actually investigating. It's more like contemplative journalism in action.
Yeah.
You know what? That sounds even better.
Yeah. That sounds more like blogging to me.
Pretty much.
So, Adam, do you want to, while I chew on this thing, would you like to give your pick?
Sure. I'm gonna keep it, back in the days when I grew up with LED football, and go with, and this could only be better if they would just do the next app they need to do, and I'm hoping it's coming, but I'm going to pick Space Ace by Dragon's Lair, LLC.
Oh, yeah. Don Bluth.
Just because when those, and anybody who knows what I'm talking about, back in the day in the 80s, mid 80s, late 80s, video games, there came this thing called Laserdisc games. And the mechanics of it are stupid, and it's still stupid. It's like, remember the pattern, press left at the right time, and you'll get to the next level. But back in that day, it was just sort of cool to see, animated graphics by Don Bluth that were, actual video animations, and you kind of controlled where the video would go next by hitting the joysticks left, right, up, or down, and tapping button at the exact right time. They were the hardest games in the world. They were obviously designed to make you pay a lot of quarters, and I'm sure they made a lot of money off these games.
Yeah, because that was one of the first games that was over a quarter, too.
Yeah, there was that one, and what was the other one? Is the guy that was like a knight with a sword?
Dragon's Lair. That was the original one, and then Space Ace followed it up. Apparently, they released Space Ace first on the iPhone. If they had Dragon's Lair, I would have bought it probably faster than I bought Space Ace. But what was cool, the cool thing about Space Ace after I bought it, and it's not cheap, it's $4.99, so you have to really love sort of that era and that title. I wouldn't recommend this for everybody who's just looking for a casual game, because it is a little expensive, and if you're not into it, you'll probably go, this is really stupid.
It's like watching a cartoon that you have to keep starting to watch over again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it gets really tedious. But it has a level where it actually even shows you press the left arrow. It lights up the left arrow right at the right moment on the easiest mode. So I was actually able in the first 10 minutes to get through the entire game to the end, which I never could do plunking quarters into the machine. So I was happy. I was sold
and
at that point.
That was worth $5 right there.
It was. So I actually know how that game ends now. And now I can start to go back and, turn that off and start to memorize the pattern and then start to really impress people. So, and I've only spent $5, and I probably spent 10 times more than that in the arcades when I was a kid trying to get through
easily.
This thing. So for my money, money well spent.
Your pick so blows mine out of the water. That's way better. All right, so what I'm going to say is everyone needs to go with Adam's pick. It's the best.
Okay, so I will start talking again because I have no idea. I can't relate on that because I'm what, like 12 or something?
Yeah, oh, that's right. You had your birthday.
Yay. Ken, do you have an iPhone pick for us this week?
I'm just going to suggest one of the wonders of something that's in 3.0. When I took that trip to New York a couple of weeks ago, I actually, sort of a geek, although what's really cool is you don't have to be as much of a geek as you used to. I just walked around with Voice Memo and started recording different sounds of the city and actually turned that into a show for day 6. So what I did was sort of like a walking tour of here's where I am, here's what I was thinking, but, in a kind of a cool way. And it was nothing that I ever would have done if they hadn't built it into the iPhone. Because, taking out your iPod, especially in Manhattan, and putting on the microphone and then standing there and recording, it worked out a lot better than I thought it would. So if you think that voice memo is stupid because you don't have anything that you want to record, just start listening around you. Because I thought it was a blast, honestly. And the other thing is I haven't downloaded any new apps lately. But it's the most beneficial app for me in the past, few weeks, because I actually took something that Apple already put on the phone and was able to add an element that completely changed one of my shows from just like me reading something I had written to actually putting out what I thought was a decent production, and got a lot of decent feedback from it too. I mean, the other thing that was amazing to me, the quality on it's fantastic.
Yeah.
which is weird because the call quality, I mean, that's one of the biggest complaints about the iPhone has been the call quality. Now, I'm assuming that actually has something to do with AT&T's network, not necessarily the microphone. But the call quality on all of the audio that I recorded walking around New York was 1,000 times better than I expected it would be. So that's what I got. Although my other pick is LED Football 2, which I'll be downloading as soon as we're done.
Cool. And that actually reminds me of a story that I wrote up earlier this week. If any of you are familiar with the band The 88, I'm a fan. They recorded a new single using just the iPhone. They used an application called 4Track, and I'm going to try and play it, and I might just blow everybody away with the volume, so I haven't tried this, but... So yeah, I mean, it actually kind of sounds a little bad the way I piped that through, but it sounds really professional, and it's actually on the iTunes store for 99 cents. It's called Love is the Thing, and it's a pretty good single, and I mean, they recorded it on their iPhone.
Yeah, it has kind of an Apples in Stereo feel to it.
I love that you enjoy Apples in Stereo.
Dude, they rock. I love Apples in Stereo.
Have you heard the 88?
Yes. And as soon as I heard it, I thought, oh, this is like listening to Apples in Stereo.
You love them even after they sold out to the Zune commercial?
Did they?
That broke my heart. And
yes, they did.
Oh, Apples in Stereo?
It was like this little subtle slam, I think, back at Apple by them actually choosing that band. I always thought it felt it was, but yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
Well, theirs was also
that from my memory.
Theirs was also the free demo that was given away when Amazon MP3 launched.
Right.
And yeah. I think also the Shins did a Zune ad, which it was a good ad. I don't know, I guess. And it was the Shins, so rock on. But yeah, the 88, Love is a Thing. That was cool. There's actually, if you go to, I'll throw this in the show notes and put a link to it, because there's also a video of them doing it. And I think they even blogged about the process. So they use an application called 4Track, and we reviewed that a while ago. I think it's like $5 for 4Track. $10.
That was more expensive than, yeah.
$10.
It's a cool app, though.
It is. It really is. If we got it, we gave it a 4 out of 5, so you know it's good. And they have a lot of new features since we threw up the review, so check it out. The 88 loves it. You should, too. And that wasn't my pick. It did sound like a pick, though. Ken, your pick was the LED something? Football?
Well, I was kind of kidding about that. Really, it's just the voice memo thing.
Oh, well, I mean, they're going to want to...
But 4Track is better. It blows my pick away, so never mind.
Well, people are going to want to know how to get to it, so I'm writing it down to put it in the show notes. LED
what?
Football?
No. It's the built-in...
Michael, voice memo,
what are
seriously.
You drinking?
Voice, yeah, no kidding. Voice memo. I mean, that's seriously, I don't have a pick. I haven't downloaded right. anything in a long time. That's what I've been
it's
using.
It's free.
For most
download the 3.0 update.
Oh, yes.
It's the one that comes on the phone.
Oh, then on what phone? The
God, you're killing me.
The Palm Pre.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
There's a free cheese slicer included.
It's a special level in Space Ace.
Okay.
If you unlock the special level in Space Ace, you get 5 new apps for your iPhone.
Stop telling me these things. I believe you.
Yeah.
Corey, do you have an iPhone pick,
Michael,
for us?
Michael, it's forward, back, back, shake, shake, flip. Okay?
And then the flip move is where you throw it into the pool, right?
Right.
Okay. Corey?
Yeah.
Would you like to give an iPhone pick?
Poor Corey.
You know,
sure.
It's not,
been sitting there
you
crying.
Can call to UAW. They might.
They might take you back.
He's going, what did I get myself into?
Yeah. All right. So my pick is, it's called Heyway, and it's basically short for Hey, Where Are You? It's a location service. It's kind of like Looped, but a crummier interface. And it integrates like push notifications into like a location based service, so you can like track where people are. It's great for stalkers and yeah.
So it has a, it has push built into it, so it'll actually you can annoy other people about where you are.
Yeah, you can like send people notifications of where you're at or request like their location.
Have you used Brightkite at all?
Yeah.
Is it similar to that?
Kind of, but it's not really like a service in the way that Brightkite is. It's more of just like using push notifications.
Okay, and I can't get, of course, I can't get the iTunes to bring that up, but so I'll take your word for it. It's free. It's called Hey, yeah. Where Are You? And you just type in Hey Way.
Right.
And I love that they posted, wow, they posted 2 and 1 star reviews on the side. That's interesting. But yeah, I mean, if Corey likes it, then just get it. And it's free, so I'll check it out. Hey Way. And so my pick, because I went down to Florida and I enjoyed the heck out of this, it's the Kensington windshield mount for iStuff, because it's not just for the iPhone. It's, you know, it'll really hold anything that fits in the little pinchers that it has. It's got a, essentially, it's like a coil, I'm guessing, a metal coil that is flexible at any point on the whatever mount thing. You throw it up on your windshield with a suction cup, and it actually has a little lever that, you know, locks it. So it's not one of those lame suction cups that's just going to fall down. It's really sturdy. And the thing I like about it is that it's not sized for any particular device. You set it down, and then you push together the two sides that just kind of hold it, hold whatever device you threw in there with, you know, there's padding on each of the little arms, and you just push it together. It's held in there, and you can, it has access to the dock connector spot. So you can throw a dock cable on there and, you know, plug it into your car. And I really like it because I can have a case on my iPhone and not have to, you know, pull it out of the case and put it in the thing. And it's a big, you know, whatever irritating thing to put that in my car. I just throw it in and ta-da. And then when you're done, you hit a little button on the back, it opens up and you can take your iPhone out. And I should have, you know, before I started talking about this, figured out what the price is, but it's the Kensington windshield mount from Kensington, as you would guess, while I'm pretending to say something interesting while I look up the information. $30. And I love it. So check it out. And with that, iPhoneAlley.com is the place to get more news, tips, and reviews. Of course, you can share an iPhone tip that you found, something cool, or if you want us to review a product or an application, drop us a line using the Contact Us link. You can also get show notes and our iPhone picks at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. You can send feedback to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com if you'd like to tell us, you know, you want more of a certain guest or something, or if you want Jeff to have his cat on as a guest.
I'm sure Nightshade would totally dig that.
That would be great. So, and of course, you can find Jeff at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, iPodObserver.com, twitter.com/jgamut, and thevirusyouwanttocatch.com. I think he bought a new one for us, didn't he?
Yes. He did. I can't remember what it was, but I saw it.
I think it was Mr. Cuddles.
Call Mr. Cuddles?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
I'm checking right now. Yep, callmrcuddles.com. And that'll take you to the Jeff-O-Rama.
You know, at some point, people are going to be able to type in almost any random
expletive,
and it'll go right to my blog.
That's the way it should be. So thanks again to Greg Homyak from the AMC podcast. I'm just searching Twitter right now as I bring that up. So yeah, thanks again, Greg. That's awesome. And of course, Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com and twitter.com/MacCast. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Oh, thanks. Hey, can I say one thing? I want to mention, and I normally don't do this, but the last show, and this is iPhone 3GS related, that I did, I found out I had no idea that, you know, at WWDC, they do the keynote and they mentioned the iPhone 3GS having accessibility, specifically voiceover, but a bunch of other things. And I had no idea that the iPhone 3GS really opened up the iPhone to blind and visually impaired users. Mm-hmm. And so my last show was all about accessibility. I had Shelley Brisbane, who is a visually impaired podcaster's been in the Mac community for a really long time, on the show, along with a guy named Josh DeLioncourt and Shane Jackson, both who are blind iPhone owners. They bought the iPhone 3GS, and we talk about all of the accessibility and just everything Apple's done in that arena with the device. And it was a show I was blown away by. So, you know, even if you don't subscribe to the MacCast, it might be one that you want to check out. So you can find it on MacCast.com or just check out the show on iTunes. Just download that one episode. But I had a lot of fun recording it, and it kind of opened my eyes to, you know, something that's really changed with the new iPhone 3GS that isn't really talked about a lot in the media.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
MacCast.com for that. And Mr. Ken Ray is here from the Mac OS yes. Ken podcast, macosken.com. It's an awesome show. It's like, what, 3 minutes during the day, during the week? Maybe five?
Maybe 15.
Is it? Did it get, I haven't listened to it in a long time.
It's just so much fun.
There's just so much. It goes by so fast, Mr. Ken
yeah,
Ray.
That's it. Actually, tomorrow, well, Monday, whenever this is, I don't know when this is coming out, but, you know, the holidays kind of suck all the air out of news. So 8 minutes, actually, we're clocking in at 8 minutes. I almost want to play a song afterwards just to make it the usual 10 to 15 minutes people have come to expect. But yeah, usually it's about 10 to 15 minutes a day. Gotcha. Monday through Friday.
And then, of course, there's the day six.
There is indeed. And that one's only 3 minutes long.
Oh, good. So you're going to, it's just going to be a little bit of me saying
something. But they're
something
the best
random.
3 minutes you've ever heard.
This week he's playing me at high speed.
Exactly. Super high speed. Hey, we're podcasters. Let's talk about that later. I do have never mind. Another time.
Twitter.com/MacOSKen. Go bother him there and listen to his words of wisdom. Did I get you on Twitter? I think I did. I'm going to give myself credit for that.
You did not get me on Twitter. You got me more into Twitter.
Okay.
You were not the person who started it. You got me going a little bit more. But really, honestly, what it was iPhone apps that really got me paying attention to Twitter, because even the desktop clients on my computer, I wasn't. You turned me on to the idea of the desktop client on my computer, but even then I was kind of like, I mean, it's kind of okay, but I still have to check it.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, that's easier for me to do on the iPhone.
I'll take that.
All right.
Okay, cool. And Corey Bowen, of course, is here. He's our new iPhone Alley team member. He's going to be doing stuff on the iPhoneAlley.com with news and maybe some other stuff. We're very happy to have him. And of course, you can find him at twitter.com/CoreyB. Are you still there? Or did we kill you off?
No, not yet.
It's way past the time you normally go to sleep, so I'll wrap this up now. My Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, and iPhone Alley's Twitter is twitter.com/iPhoneAlley. And with that, another episode of the iPhone Alley podcast is in the can. iPhone. Right?
Well, the audio quality on that end bumper has really gone up.
Yeah. More beatboxy, but better.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hip. It's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we going to do?
Oh, you want to have like a dirty word, don't you?
He wants you to say monkey penis.
Oh, I can do that. Monkey penis.